Jay Jaffe of Fangraphs is with me now. Jay, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Adam.
You know, last year, Jay, was a weird offseason, right? Everything got pushed back. The players are getting angry. A lot of the contracts were down. Although, you know, it wasn't a great free agent class. This year is better. It's still early, but, you know, especially with all the guys that just flooded the market with the non-tenders yesterday, do you think we're going to see a similar slow market to what happened last year?
Well, I think we're probably going to see a lot of those mid-market guys who got screwed last year. I think they're probably going to be a little bit more eager to take what's out there sooner rather than later, especially with the flood that we're seeing of like higher end relative to years past that were non-tendered. You know, these guys know that. That they're in competition with other options, and it's not a great thing for the union, but they've kind of made their bed here as to what's happening. I think we'll see that end of things sped up. I don't think we're necessarily going to see the big names, urgently moving. I think we know with regards to Scott Boras that he likes the slow walk until January and February, his biggest clients. Manny Machado, I think, might be the first to sign of those two, but he's going to go through all of his options too, and see if he can get a better price and better offers.
Jay, as a Cubs fan personally, I was disappointed that the Cubs didn't non-tender Addison Russell. Were you surprised by that?
No? A little. But I will say that. I'm obviously very uncomfortable with what Addison Russell has done. I could see them wanting to distance themselves from it, and I think they handled it poorly when the allegations first surfaced in 2017. The statements I saw yesterday, at least, were went beyond what other teams in similar situations have dealt with similar players. So I'm maybe a little bit optimistic that they're at least working with him to try to. Set a better example, for Russell and for the industry on how to handle these cases, because unfortunately it's just a harsh reality that we have to live with. Obviously, we're seeing it now in the NFL as well, two high profile cases in 1 week, and if baseball can at least show that it can handle these incidents more responsibly, I think that's a positive. But it's a tough. The Cubs have put themselves in a tough position.
We're talking with Jay Jaffe of Fangraphs. Speaking of the day yesterday, a couple of moves. I was surprised the Angels non-tendered Blake Parker. Hunter Strickland was a little surprised. Maybe Mike Fiers. What moves kind of stood out to you yesterday, whether guys were tendered or non-tendered?
Yeah, those were ones. Parker had closing experience, but there are a lot of closers out, and the Angels seemed likely to want to move up in that class of players. You know, guys like David Robertson and Zach Britton. Craig Kimbrell out there, Juris Familia, a lot of options there. Fiers, boy, that's a guy who gets traded practically every year, which pretty much means you're the definition of fungible. I think most of these guys are going to be fine in the end, and that they're going to find work. It was a little surprising. Strickland, was the closer of the future in San Francisco, but man, that guy's got a head full of rocks. He's kind of like the Nuke LaLoosh of, brainless hard throwers. Locally, I guess not really surprised that the Mets are cutting ties with Wilmer Flores. He's a likable player for sure, but a very fringe player. You know, doesn't have the power to be a full-time first baseman, doesn't have the glove to be a starter at any other infield spot. Just kind of a tweener. And when those guys start to get expensive, there's the change of scenery involved. So I wasn't that surprised. I guess I'm mostly surprised that just there's a higher volume of these guys. Yeah. But then when you think about the way the owners are playing this and the executives are playing this, it makes sense. You flood the market, you drive prices down, and that's really what they're doing.
We're talking with Jay Jaffe of Fangraphs. Speaking of the Mets, there's been a lot of talk the last, I guess, 3-4 days about this trade involving Robinson Cano and Edwin Diaz and some Mets prospects and Jay Bruce. We don't know every last detail yet. There seems to be some confusion about how much money, the Mets will be getting in return. Without knowing maybe for sure what that money is going to be, what's your thoughts on this deal the way it looks right now?
Yeah, I don't love it from the Mets standpoint. I think that, you know, you're taking on a 35, 36 year old player who's inevitably going to be in decline, and you've got him under contract for 5 years. I mean, you're catching a falling steak knife. Diaz is an excellent pitcher who has 4 years of control, but he's a closer, and you know, the closers out there that only cost you money. They're not going to cost you a first round, you know, two first round picks, which is what the Mets are dealing here. The contract of Jay Bruce and Anthony Suarez, like, I hated the Jay Bruce contract from the moment it was signed. There were guys who were getting 1 year and $5 million when he was getting $339. I thought that was a ridiculous contract, especially when you consider the redundancy of, you know, left-handed hitting corner outfielders that they've got, it, you know, with Conforto and just the way that the parts in the Mets outfield have never fit together, you know, since before Jay, not Jay Bruce, but just such a mismatched set. So getting rid of that contract, offloading some other money with Swarzak, you know, it mitigates what they're doing, and I can understand from the standpoint of a new executive coming in why Brody Van Wagner will be doing that. But I just don't love this deal at all, and I think that it's Cano's not going to be the star he was when he was here before, because he's got that PED suspension hanging over his head. There's not going to be nearly as much enthusiasm when he gets to 3,000 hits, which I think is, you know, a likelihood eventually. If the Mets make other moves, if they're really loading up, if they're going to spend money, I think they have a chance to contend for a wild card spot. But boy, that division is going to be a tough one, because the Braves are here and the Phillies are coming. They're going to come away with either Harper or Machado, I think, and also a frontline starting pitcher, and they're going to be contending, and the Nationals are going to reload, and boy, that's a tough division to compete in if you're the Mets.
Yeah, I feel like this trade would make more sense for a team that needs a closer and is right there. Like, I don't think the Cubs really need a second baseman, but like, if the Cubs made this trade, like, I'd understand it a little more, because they're, you know, they could win the World Series this year. I just don't see that with the Mets, but so I agree with you. But let's talk about a trade that did happen. Yan Gomes goes from the Indians to the Nationals, and Jay, the catching market is really, speaking of a flooded market, I mean, you've got some, you know, pretty decent free agent catchers. JT Realmuto is on the market, and he may be the best catcher of all if you look at offense defense combined. Apparently Francisco Cervelli's on the market. Russell Martin, if anybody's interested there. Wilson Ramos is a free agent. Lucroy, Grandal. I mean,
it's a flood.
Yeah, I mean, and yet the Indians seem like they got two decent prospects. I don't know, with Gomes coming off, you know, one of his best seasons. What'd you think of that move, and what do you think of the idea where Realmuto might end up?
Yeah, the state of catching major league wide is not very strong.
Yeah,
Ramos and Grandal are the best free agent options out there. I like Grandal a lot. He obviously had a terrible postseason, but he is an excellent two-way player. Not a high batting average guy, but excellent at pitch framing. Okay defense, certainly better defensively than he showed in the NLCS with the Dodgers. Ramos is a slightly better hitter, but durability and defensive problems for him. Guys like Lucroy and Suzuki have seen better days. I think Gomes is a legitimate starting catcher, and the Nationals, you know, they had Ramos, but he had injuries and wasn't always available, and they had to settle for backups. So this is an upgrade for them. I don't have any real knowledge of the prospects in that particular deal. It's kind of escaped my notice because I was buried in Hall of Fame stuff this week. But I like it in terms of a win now thing, and the Nationals are in a win now phase. So even after losing Bryce Harper, they've got a lot of talent there. So from that standpoint, I like it for the Nationals.
You know, the Bryce Harper thing is obviously fascinating, because it's going to be interesting to see how big the contract gets. Same thing with Manny Machado. And, you know, in the end, do you think Manny Machado, his numbers are affected by, you know, all this talk about, you know, is he going to play hard all the time and all that stuff? Do you think that factors in at all?
You know, I think most of that is eyewash. I really do.
Yeah.
I think in the end, you know, it's any team pursuing him, like the Yankees, like the Phillies, is going to have to say those things to appease their own fan base, because they don't want their fan base to be saying, oh yeah, we signed this lazy bum. So certainly an aspect of this, I think privately Machado will say, hey, I think those statements were, you know, maybe taken out of context, or his agent sort of said those statements were maybe taken out of context. He doesn't really mean it like that. He is a hard player. I mean, like, look, Manny Machado keeps himself in excellent shape. Manny Machado has incredible talent. You know, every player, I think, for the most part, as a survival tactic, has to check out a little bit because the season is so long and the schedule so grueling. You know, Robinson Cano, look, we talked about, you know, that the talk about him, why the Yankees didn't pursue him was this, you know, was this perception that he was a lazy guy. You know, not everybody has right. to bust it hard down the line all the time. And as you age, you know, the chance that you're going to blow a hamstring or something like that on some dumb, you know, like sprinting to first base on a routine ground out, who cares? You just don't, you know, the goal is to be available for, you know, as close to 162 games. And if you have to, you know, shift down to a lower gear once in a while, you know, the assumption is that you're at least going to be playing hard when it matters, and you'll smart and have a high enough baseball IQ to be selective about when you're coasting.
Jay, do you believe that Zach Greinke and one of the top three Indian starters will both be traded in the next few weeks?
Yes, I do. I do. I think it's not necessarily going to be Corey Kluber or Carlos Carrasco. I'm hearing that Trevor Bauer might be the guy on the move, and we know that Trevor Bauer has had problems throughout his career in terms of playing nice with others.
Yes.
I think that I'm hearing that he could be the guy, and certainly, you know, with the level that he reached this past year and the club control that he has, I think he's a very appealing acquisition. I think Greinke is too. He's really showed some staying power. Obviously, the key there is how much money Arizona is going to eat and whether he can find a fit that satisfies his no trade list. I think he's got 15 teams on it, and I know that the Dodgers and the Angels are among them. The Cardinals are among them. I believe the Mets are among them. But the Brewers, interestingly, are not. And he had a pretty good time in Milwaukee the last time he was there. So I wouldn't be surprised if they put something together.
Jay, you know, I know you said you were busy with the Hall of Fame stuff. It's the time of the year, right? It won't be too long before we're announcing the next class of the Hall of Fame. Let's talk about some of the new guys on the ballot. How many locks for you, or at least do you think should be locks for the Hall of Fame, the new guys on the ballot?
Obviously, Mariano Rivera is a lock.
Yeah.
And Edgar Martinez should be a lock. He's at 70% after last year, heading into his final year of eligibility, and already from the few writers that have announced their ballots, he's picked up a few votes. So I'd like to think he's going to be a lock. We're seeing strong initial support for Roy Halladay, the late Roy Halladay, who I think, you know, does not have the traditional career shape that we've seen of starters that get elected. Relatively high peak, short career guy, not unlike Pedro Martinez, not as dominant as Pedro Martinez in the way of like strikeouts, but elite for a decade in that department, and two Cy Youngs, the no hitters, just testimonials to his work ethic. I think he's going to be in there too. The question is whether we're going to get a fourth guy, which we've only had four other times, and Mike Mussina is kind of on the fringe there. I think he belongs in the Hall of Fame for sure, and I've made a point of emphasizing that every year when I write about him. But I think he's probably realistically a year away from, you know, in terms of the amount of support that he can get from the writers, because not everybody's filling out 10 slots from what we've seen, and there's still people who remain unconvinced that he's worthy, unfortunately.
I work in Cleveland during the week, Jay, and I get a lot of trouble whenever I say that I don't think Omar Vizquel belongs in the Hall of Fame.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Yeah, I mean, according to your system, he's not even really that close. I know he was a really good defensive player, excellent, but to me, that's it. I can't put him in the Hall of Fame for just that, right?
Yeah, I think he's kind of the definition of the good field no hit. I mean, his boosters want to compare him to Ozzie Smith, and from a superficial standpoint, they have a point. But when you look more closely at Ozzie Smith's numbers versus Omar Vizquel's numbers head to head, Ozzie was doing what he was doing in a much lower run scoring environment,
That's
and he
right.
had tremendous value on the bases. that Vizquel does not. Vizquel was doing his thing, you know, at the height of scoring levels, you know, and just it wasn't all like the offensive numbers are just not nearly as good. And the defensive numbers aren't as good either. I mean, you know, he was a flashy player. He did not have the range of Ozzie Smith. He made a lot of highlight plays. He had very soft hands and a good arm, but he was not the equal of Ozzie Smith in range. And, you know, when you look at the advanced statistics, it's really clear that there's a gap on in every phase of the game. There's a substantial gap between him and Ozzie Smith. And that's the model for a defense first shortstop. I understand why fans are passionate about him. I just don't see him as being a very good pick for the Hall.
Last thing, Jay, do you think the steroid guys make a further push and ever get in, or are they finished?
This is really a make-or-break year for them because they only gained about 3 points last year, and they've got this year and three more left. You know, they've got to get into the high 60s here, and really it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how, or at least the mid 60s. They've really got to, you know, gain. Because they had big games in each of the last 2 years, and then the sunsetting of the older voters that were dead set against them helped them 2 years ago in the election. Bud Selig helped them the year after that. They didn't really have that kind of spark last year, and they don't really. You know, and we had the Joe Morgan letter, so maybe since that card has been played, maybe they do regain some support this year.
Jay, great stuff as always, man. Thank you for joining me.
All right, sure thing, Adam. Take care.